Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to the work session for the City of Cedar Hills. Today's Tuesday, October 17th. I currently have 6:01 PM. I call the work session to order. We don't have a full house yet. We're missing Mrs. Anderson and Mr. Sepala, but we're going to start the quorum. And so, Mr. Goodwin, you're going to set the table. We are going to be talking. I asked for this discussion to Mrs. Anderson is here now. So I asked for this discussion regarding our roads, and it's not any road specific. It's really about the condition of roads, how we maintain them long into the future, and not even get into a situation like some neighboring cities where they've spent only their BNC class road funds, which has put them behind the eight ball in terms of maintaining their roads, and now they're serious problems. So, Mr. Goodwin, why don't you start?
Okay. Let me start the big picture, and then we'll drill down the roads. In January, when we had the council retreat, one of the council's goals was to understand our infrastructure needs. Jeff and I, and Greg as well, have had a number of conversations talking about our asset management. The city has a lot of assets that you may be aware of and you may not be aware of. We count GASB 34 requires us that we monetize, give a monetary value to our roads and account for that in our annual statements. But also, and so we have to be planning on our road replacement, but we also have other assets in the city that we need to be planning on replacements. So, for example, this building has AC units, a number of AC units that at one point will need to be replaced. If we look at the parks, all the park infrastructure at some point needs to be replaced. So everything that we own has a timer on it, and at some point we're going to have to either replace, rehab, or rebuild everything that we own. It's a continual cycle. So with that, we uploaded into your Dropbox file this document yesterday, which was our pavement report from January 2016. I worked with the firm that we contracted out to do all of our work orders. They help us manage our assets. But they came out and they did a visual analysis of all of the roads in the city. And so there's 376 road segments. And a road segment is basically intersection to intersection. So one long road can be multiple road segments. But let's talk about asset management before we dive down into roads. So the process of doing asset management, and I've seen a number of ways you do it, but the idea there is on page 2 in this document, where you have an inventory, you assess the condition of all of your inventory, you give it valuation, and part of that valuation is you have to give it to understand its life. Then you start looking at the maintenance, you look at finances, then close to the end you start looking at the budgeting, the resource allocation, and finally you establish the performance standards, and then you have to come up with a plan in order to address what your findings are. And so asset management for anything, whether it be roads, pipes, anything the city owns, it's really cyclical. The city should always be doing studies to see where they are on various assets. So I spoke with Jeff this year about possibly doing some sort of pipe analysis on our culinary water system. It's parts of the city are fairly older now, and we need to get a better understanding of where we are on those. So, with pavement, if you follow local politics, you'll know that roads is a fun issue for some of our neighboring communities. In Pleasant Grove, they have Prop 3, which is, if passed, will require their city council to allocate the first $2.5 million of their general fund, which is 20% of their general fund, to roads, purely to roads, before they fund anything else. And that proposition doesn't come with a subsequent revenue stream. So they're using existing revenue streams and saying 20% of this has to go to roads. To me, that is a very drastic measure that they're taking. But some of these communities are finding themselves in a situation where I don't feel like they've maybe properly allocated financial resources over the years to address their needs. And so they're in a bit of a quandary where they do have a short-term need, but they still need to have a long-term vision. So let's talk about our roads. Every community has needs for funding their roads. Our roads are in fairly good condition. If you've got the opportunity to read through the Iowa report, we're doing okay right now. There's some areas where we can improve, but we're doing fairly okay. In the past, cities have done road bonds, and they're starting to find that that's not a very effective way to address road maintenance. What you do is they find, and Provo put out a really good video about this, and the example they gave was, you take out a $10 million, 10-year road bond, and due to bonding requirements, you're required to spend all $10 million of dollars of that bond within the first 3 years. So you are left with no money the last 7 years. Well, roads deteriorate. So by year 8 of that 10-year bond, you're having to re-bond. So you take the last $2 million of that bond, roll it into a new bond, and now you're bonding for 10 years, and the cost of roads went up. So now you're bonding for 10 years, $14 million. And once again, you're spending all $14 million in the first 3 years. And all of a sudden, you start seeing the need for bonds increase. And what that does is it eats into your capacity to borrow as a city. And so long term, that's not a financially savvy plan or financially intelligent way to address road bonds or to address road funds. So what a lot of the communities are doing, Provo's done it, Highland's doing it, Pleasant Grove, I've heard rumblings of it if Prop 3 does not pass, is utility transportation, which is where it's built into your utility bill. What that does is it gives you a steady stream, gives cities a steady stream of cash to put towards roads. In the case of Provo, they're paying per resident on average $4 a month or $4 a quarter for their property taxes. And that only covers the interest on their prior road bonds. So they're saying, we're going to pay those. We're going to institute a $3 utility transportation fee. So imagine $7 rather than $4. That's going to go towards roads. But those bonds are going to then expire, and then we'll be paying free. So in the long run, it actually saves the citizens of Provo money.
Can I get some input on that?
Yeah.
I know about the Provo situation really well. And so Provo is a unique city where they have a university, they have two temples, tons of churches, a large hospital, and a lot of assets that are owned by nonprofit companies. Therefore, they're not paying taxes. So Provo instituted a road utility fee that everyone uses, including the companies that are nonprofit institutions. So you use it, you pay for it. But they also said that if Prop 1 were to ever pass in Utah County, they would do away with the road fee. So each city is different. Right now, there's seven cities that have already adopted a road utility fee just because they can't get a bond to pass in their cities. And I know that virtually every city, Cedar Hills is not looking at it that closely, but virtually every city in the committee I chair for MAG is looking at road utility fees, if not to use today, but perhaps to use in the future, particularly if Prop 1 is not brought back and passes. So we do have one school, we have several churches, and so there is some land that's owned in our city by nonprofits, not a lot, but that's something that our city could look at some point.
Yes, and don't get me wrong, I'm not coming here tonight saying we're going to propose a road utility. I'm just kind of giving you an overview of what other communities are doing, nor am I proposing a bond. So don't confuse what I'm saying, please. But let's go to page 5 of this Iowa report. It's the condition assessment. And this is, I think, the crux of the matter here. So they went through and they did a visual analysis of all of our roads. And I think that when you talked with Jeff today, I think that they've included some roads that are not ours in our competing report. Anyway, so they say a condition assessment can provide information required for accurate modeling, prediction, forecasting, depreciation, and remaining service life. So that RSL would be a condition assessment for each asset you've done on the entire system was once every 3 years. So this is something that I feel like we're going to have to revisit every 5 years, I believe. And then on the next page.
Quick question.
Yeah.
How much we paid iWork to
do this? Jeff, do you remember how much we paid iWork to do this?
It included a substantial more than I mean, this was to create the software, enter all the data in, and do the review, and it's about 5,200, is what I'm remembering.
Oh, that's not bad at all.
No, it's not bad at all, because part of the report that you didn't get is the road segments, and then what the estimated life is, and what the recommendation is. And there's somewhere we can argue back and forth about what they're recommending versus what they're recommending. But that's, I don't think that's really the point of what tonight is. Tonight I'm trying to get like a.
Yeah, did they do the industry as well?
Yes, they did.
They did, okay.
So for the next one, it'd be in the 3,000 range for a review.
It seems like if you're recommending it every 3 years, it seems to be money well.
Right, exactly. And then, but I don't think this is the only utility service that we make. There's a way.
They're only doing roads.
It's only roads, but if you think about it, you have water pipes, you have PI lines, you have sidewalks, curb gutters, streetlights that the city maintains. We have a lot of assets that you just don't normally think about when you're thinking about the city's assets. So you look at that chart, and it's got our RSL, residual service life, and you see where we are. So what we did was I took the 376 road segments and plotted them out and passed those down. So what this is if you look at that chart, you see zero, you see the 0.6 of our roads are on zero. Well, on the map, you see the red is the roads that, according to this report, are at zero RSL. And those are, there's a little cul-de-sac down on the southwest corner of town, and then there's Jen Johnson Lane, which is there, which we know about. Then if you go to 2 years, you see a few more orange segments. As you go to 6 years, yellow, you see even more. And then at green, at 8 years, you see even more. But what I want to draw your attention to is that 10, that blue is 10 to 12. I didn't have anything beyond 12 years. But the 10 to 12, I'm going to call it a time bomb because it's coming. While we are not in the position of other communities, that is not to say that we could not be there in the future. We don't do this right.
So just clarification, these roads in the Cedars West and Cedars East, these are HOA maintained?
Cedars West, the wagon wheel, those are HOA maintained. We own Briggs, Hayes Circle, and Nelson, leading in.
The ones that are shown, we own.
Those ones we own.
The how is Cedars East so cut up like that?
What's that?
Why is Cedars East so cut up like that?
They're above 12 years.
Only the townhomes are in an HOA.
Yeah.
All the rest of the streets aren't HOA.
So some of the roads are either not marked for one of two reasons. Either they're private, like in Cedars Wagon Wheel,
right,
or they're just above the 12-year RSL.
So they're good.
So they're okay. I'm not worried about them.
Like Sugar Loaf, which we just redid.
That one's ours. We don't need to redo it. I'm not worried about that. So what I'm trying to show with this is that, yeah, we're okay this year. We're going to be okay next year. Probably the year after that. But we have a large number of our roads that need to be addressed in the next. If we wait 8 years, we wait too long. But
yeah, I mean, we have reading that. I'm reading the chart. Is that we don't see that out.
Yes,
we have a debate to it. Bubble of roads all at the same time. Really, which is
they were all
there. That's the point, is that they're all put in at the same time. But this is where cities road bond, because they think we need a lot of money right now. The way to really do this is to flatten this out so that your road maintenance is fairly stasis year over year. That way you can budget for it. You're doing a certain percentage of roads, you're addressing the needs, and you're building that residual service life so that you have roads, you know what to expect. Otherwise, if you're going to address just the roads each year, you're going to continually have this big project coming down the road, pardon the pun, every 15 years or 20 years.
So it seems like probably on board with you that we need balance. So it seems like the next step would be moving to figure out what would it take to speed out and what that cost. And then, assuming we got the smoke out, how much would that cost on a regular basis? Like, and how much over and above our current Class B and C road funds is that? And that would indicate the gap that we have in terms of what we're collecting, which is being spent, and then we can talk about how we're going to fund that.
Yeah, and see, on that analysis, you're getting a little bit more of a deep dive than what we've done. But But it, and it, but it's hard to say because not all road treatments are equal. Crack seal versus a slurry seal versus a chip seal versus a complete overlay, they're all very different treatments and they all cost a lot of different, they cost different amounts of money. So it's hard to project that exactly year over year, but you're right, there is a need to smooth out that distribution so that the city doesn't have, so the city does have equal costs year over year. And I think it's not something that the city does overnight, it's something that has to be done over time. Otherwise, if you do it all overnight, you're just pushing that big line further down, and it's still going to come down. You understand?
So if you do it overnight, everybody wastes the morning drives on average.
Right. Okay. So you have to take little chips and push them up and start to cut that column down and start putting those roads, putting them off into other RSL distributions. Anyway, GAP 34. The Government Accounting Standards Board requires that we show depreciation of our assets, but they depreciate the asset in a straight line math, meaning that you can take 20, you can value your road, divide it by 20, and that's how much you depreciate it every year. Problem with that is that your road does not depreciate, or your road surface doesn't degrade in a linear fashion. Your road, if you can imagine this, it will, year one through probably 12 or 13, it kind of has this gradual slope. What I was reading was, you'll see 40% deterioration in the first 60% of the years, the first 60% of the asphalt life. So if you take 12, 13 years out, you're starting to get down. In the next year and a half, so the next 15%, when they grow 75% through its useful life, you see another 40%. So then at year 12, 13, quality of your road, if you haven't done anything, just falls off a cliff. What happens is, if you don't address some of these things, if you're not doing crack sealing, if you're not doing your slurry seals, if you're not actively maintaining the roads, then you are, at the end of the life, you're going to have to do a complete rehaul of the road. And then you're really not being very good stewards of the open city money. The other thing I was reading was that for every dollar you spend in maintenance, it'll save you $7 to $10 in repair later in the road's life. So, with that, let's move on to step four, which is maintenance planning. This is where I feel like we have one piece of the puzzle here. What I've seen other communities do, and I don't know if one hand's not talking to the other, but they'll place a road, and they'll do it really well, and then the next thing I know, they're digging it up to put a water line in. So, in my mind, in a perfect world, there's an order of operations here. And so, you see Jens Monson as a failing road, but we have a plan for a sewer line to go in that road. So we're not going to go pave that road this week, even though we could. We're not going to go do that because we know we're going to dig it up in the next year or two. So as long as that's hanging out there, we're going to wait until the subsurface is ready, and then we're going to get the surface ready. So like I said, this is just a piece of the puzzle. We need to be looking at our underground infrastructure and seeing what we need to do to replace that as well. So then we can build a plan, build an asset management plan that incorporates roads and pipes, and so we're doing it in a manner that I feel is most cost effective and long in the city. Any questions so far? Well, that's kind of it. I don't have much else to say. I wanted to bring you up to speed on kind of where we were on road maintenance. I feel like our city does, actually I know our city does a really good job with road maintenance. When it's crack sealing, whether it's spring and fall, you can only be crack sealing at a certain temperature. Just guys are out there, all the time doing it. You see them out there. And those little things that you're doing in the maintenance portion really do add to the service life of the road. When you see roads start getting light gray, that means that the asphalt oxidizes and the oils have evaporated out of them, and you're going to see some real deterioration. But Jeff's guys do. Jeff and his apartment, it's been fairly well managed. And I feel like it's going to be fairly well managed in the future, but if we don't address what's coming down the pipe, we are going to have a serious issue in the next. Even though the RSL on this is 10 to 12 years, I think this is a problem that needs to be addressed for the next 2 or 3.
Any questions from the council?
So is iWork helping to draft something similar to this for the other, I know you said the other infrastructure needs, we need to do the same thing. Are they the company that's going to do it? Talk to them about doing something?
We haven't talked to them about doing it yet, but I think they could. There's other firms out there, because the problem with pipes is that you have to actually camera the lines.
Right.
So it's a little more complicated than driving around looking out your window. So it's a little more, I expect those to be more money. Does iWork even do something like that, Jeff?
We are currently we're working on the stormwater, and we've been starting on sidewalks.
Okay.
But speaking of pipes, I think in one of the next work sessions, we're going to have a similar discussion on pipes and probably our wells and how they integrate. And so I want to give you guys as much information as I possibly can in terms of some of the assets of the city. So you know where the revenue comes from regarding roads. So we generally don't take money out of the general fund to take care of roads. We use our BNC road funds, which is what, $250,000? And then the gas tax is about another $50,000, I believe. So we usually have around $300,000 a year that's being used for our roads. And so it's about 8% of our total budget, I guess. So anyway, that's where the revenue comes from. This is what I would call a need. It's not a want, it's a need. So emphasis should always be placed on the needs first before the wants. And so we really don't want to be a city that gets behind in terms of taking care of our either our roads or our pipes, so that you're forced to bond or attempt to bond in order to solve that solution. Because I really don't think a road utility fee is going to give the city that much money. We just don't have as much as, say, a Provo in terms of a percentage. They literally had over 30% of their total real estate was held by tax-exempt organizations, and we don't have that.
No, we don't have that. And if we were to do the same $3 a month utility fee, I think in a year we could get $90,000. Not very far when it comes to asset or to payment. It's not going to get you very much. So we'd be looking at something else. We'd be looking at something else there entirely.
That wouldn't be a 30% increase in our revenue.
It would, but I mean, that's, you think about the Morgan waterline rate, that was $50,000 right there, and it was a section of roads.
Well, and in comparison, Highlands, you know, they just implemented is $18.50 a month.
Yeah. But in that case, I would say that the need is greater for immediate funding there than what we have here.
I will give you a little bit of input in terms of the Transportation Governance Committee that I sit on, and what we're talking about is that they're looking at a pilot program for what's called a road user fee, and that is in place of it potentially could be in place of the gas tax that you pay at the pump, because there are so many people at Danville that have hybrids or electrical vehicles that don't fill up with gas, and therefore there's a feeling that they're not paying their fair share in terms of maintaining the roads. Same thing with bicycles, is that they make much less impact on roads, but they still make an impact. So I will say that this committee is looking at all avenues in terms of maintaining roads, including a road user fee that would replace the gas tax, so that everyone, including electrical vehicles, hybrids, and people that buy, pay their fair share in terms of the roads as well. There's nothing on the table there other than ideas. So I'm not going to take any questions about that, because I don't have any, you know, answer to give you until we have something better. So,
do you have a plan for the next steps as far as finding out which meetings you're going to do and how much cost and how budget support?
Yeah, so what we need to do is take the road segment data that iWork gave us, and because the RSL is kind of like, it also builds into the priority list report. And obviously, obviously there's things that we need to address immediately, which is process of residents, so I understand that it's a need. But if you look at this distribution graph, we're talking about flattening that out. My opinion is that we have to address our short-term needs, but also we need to start chopping down that lot of that column, address taking some, one of those projects, doing some sort of seal to it where it adds 5 to 7 years, and that pushes it out farther. And just doing it that way and starting to, and as you do that, I think that you start to, as you do that, you will flatten that distribution out, but you also have to continually do the study as well. So that's why I say it's going to take a number of years, but to say, hey, we're going to do this road here and this road then, that's a more difficult.
Yeah, I'm not really asking for that. I'm really asking for when you're going to plan out how you're going to deal with flattening it out, and when you're going to come to the council with that idea.
But I think my opinion of that is we also need more information about that as well.
Yeah,
we have been looking at that. This study was completed a year and a half ago. Approximately. So we've seen the graphs. When you graph it out, you end up with 60 to 70% in the 8 to 12 year range. And to kind of flatten that out, as you're talking about, we looked and had an opportunity last year to put a significant product on the Cedar Hills Drive. That is a long section of the road. That's most of the 10-year segment that we have there. We've completed that now, and that's now bumped that up into this 17-18-year range. So the center of that, we're balancing that out. The biggest portion is this 12-year range, in which we have been able to do a surface treatment on those prior, and we can do another surface treatment without a major rebuild. We'll do that in sections, in segments, so we can start stretching that out also, and bumping them back up into the teen years of replacement. We can do that depending on what kind of surface treatment we do. We do a slurry seal on them, it costs less, has a 5-year life expectancy, 3 to 5 year. And then the other ones we can do with a micro surface treatment, it costs a little bit more, and then it bumps us into a 7 to 8 year life expectancy. I think by utilizing that in segments throughout the city, we can get that kind of balanced out by utilizing different costs of treatment.
Do you think you can do that in your existing budget?
No, I think as you read this report, if I remember right, they're estimating to maintain this system that we're at, if the budget should be $348,000 to $368,000 a year. And I can't remember, but yeah, it's another $100,000 a year above what we're currently doing in order to maintain through the life of the roads. It's difficult when we run into these, like we have from the 0 to 2 category, because they're small segments of road, but they're very expensive. Rip it out, start over repairs, cost a lot of money. So you only get a small piece of a segment of our road system, but at a high cost. So if we look at Jen's Monson, that's one of those.
And isn't that one that potentially there's a sewer line?
That is, yeah. And we're waiting for that so we get a decision on what we're going to do with the sewer before we.
And I'm surprised that call this that about my neighborhood. It's all like this.
It is. Yeah. Yeah, I've looked at that, and the surface is great. It's failing below the surface. And that's one of those that costs a little more to commit into a heavy overnight.
And I think I know the reason behind that. The city put in an additional sewer line that went back through
the
back of the Creek. Yeah, connected that sewer to there.
Yeah, we have the other two subdivisions. The other two cul-de-sacs have the same problem. When we tried to mill an overlay, and that's when we lost all the equipment and had to do a substantial subsurface rebuild. Those are the things we're going to try to avoid. we've only been cracked ceiling for a few years, and that's one of the key items to prolonging the library.
And aren't you guys, if you guys are still at, you'd like the, it's winter time to do the heat, the crack ceiling, right?
Yeah, fall and spring.
Because you like the outdoor to contract, and you want it cold, so you fill the crack.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
I think you guys do a great job of that. I think you really keep it up on it, honestly.
We did start contracting that in about 07, 08.
Then you took it in-house?
Yeah, then we decided to do it in-house and have substantial improvement of the quality.
Good decision.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
One thing to keep in mind, though, when you're building that plan, how you fund it, like Jeff said, we're going to fund our roads like Iris. Otherwise, perhaps you can lay that money. It creates immediate need in the long run. But there's other assets too. Like I was trying to point out, like, this is a piece of the puzzle. There's other items that we have to be saving for. So when we have budget surpluses at the end of the year, to me, this is what we're saving for, is when we have a major cost, whether it's a road, whether it's a pipe break, whether it's sewer line. Whatever it is, we need to have that rainy day fund for the unexpected. And staff, to their credit, has done a good job over the years to managing their budget so that there are surpluses.
Seems okay. Like one of the main issues to look at is pipes then.
Yeah.
Because looking at all these areas, I'm sure we go back and see where we are also.
Yeah, and if you were to look at our, the next thing I was going to do, and I asked Brenda Schumann for this, but all of the water leaks that we've had, and say, in the last, how long we've been contracting, trying to create a heat map. Where are our water leaks? So if you can kind of identify that, and say, okay, well, this is the infrastructure that we need to repair. Does it correspond to the road that we use at the same time? So, there's a lot to this. It's not, I don't think you can look at this in a vacuum, roads in a vacuum. It's got to look at it's got to look at a bigger picture of the whole city. Same where it's going to be bigger.
Any other questions from council? If not, I do want to handle two more items. If you can take 5 minutes on each challenge, then I'm going to give the council a break.
Are we going to go into executive session tonight?
We're not going to executive session. I'm not sure why that's on the agenda.
Mr.
Shaw says he does not have anything to go over.
I have a question about the letter that's being sent to the county. Does that mean that we have
letter to
be
sent to the county?
Or on regarding timing road?
Well, as soon as it's prepared, then we will share it.
I would like some council feedback on where we're going with this. I was surprised that we were dropping a letter to the county from our real team.
Well, if we want to talk about that, then that's probably something to go into exec session. Does council want to go into exec session?
Yes.
The question is, does it involve reasonably informed litigation?
Yes.
I know where I'm headed with it, so I think pending is certainly not reasonably imminent.
Okay. I'll have a motion then to go into exec session.
I move that we go into closed session pursuant to Utah State Code 52-4-204 and 52-4-205, 1C, B, and E, to discuss pending or reasonably imminent litigation. This will be held in the basement of the community center.
There a second?
I'll second.
All right. We need to have a roll call vote. Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mrs. Anderson.
Aye.
Mr. Guest.
Aye.
Mr. Baird.
Aye.
Mr. Spall.
Aye.
Right. Motion is unanimous. Greg, on your way out, do you mind shutting the door?
Sure.
We have a session now, and we have approximately 15 minutes before council meeting, so how many of you guys are break, and we'll be back right at 7 o'clock. So who's winning?
It's 6.